It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night, live here on a Friday. Live on a Friday from Goodwater Brewery. We are out in Williston. What a day this has been. This place has been packed from the moment we got here. We've got people here. We've got dogs here. This place is jam-packed. They've got beers on special. You can come on out. We're here for the next hour. They're open until 8 o'clock. If you want a list of the beer specials, we've got them on our Twitter page, 101.3 ESPN. We've also got them on a Facebook Live video. It's the second leg of our winter craft beer tour. Last week, First Republic in Essex. This week, Goodwater. We're going to be out at Idle Time and Stowe soon as well. I think that's coming up on March 8th. So Arnie and Rich still hanging around. I'm here as well. Come on, hang out again till 7. We've got Aaron back in the studio. Aaron, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good as well, although you're not as good as me because, number one, you're not old enough to be in breweries, and number two, you're not old enough to enjoy them. But once 6:55 hits and that last break fires, I'm going to be over trying the hoppy side of pale, the hop collusion, the clearly hazy. I'm going to be trying a lot of that. So when you hit 21, Aaron, you can sample, and not before.
Every time we do this, I got painfully jealous. Every time.
Well, last time I brought you food. Last time we did one of these, I brought you a lot of food, so you couldn't be hurting that bad.
I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for that. But I'd love to be there. It sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, they're awesome, man. They're awesome. You can listen to Aaron tomorrow, Sports Saturday. You're getting your debut tomorrow as the lead co-host of the show because Jeff is out for the weekend. So he's on vacation. So you and Bernie Saplicki running the show yourself, huh? You got the show all planned. You ready?
Just the two of us. Sure do. Power couple hitting it hard.
Yeah.
It's a little
so
taste of my broadcast.
Sports Saturday.
No,
Sports Saturday tomorrow, 10 to noon. Sports Saturday, 10 to noon. You guys got a great guest list. Derek Dunning, Sports Information Director at Norwich, is going to join you guys, talk about men and women's hockey in the playoffs. You're going to talk with Josh Carey, who's the grandson of Chip Carey, the grandson of Harry Carey, one of the most iconic broadcasters in history. He's also the voice of Stony Brook basketball. Stony Brook and UVM are playing. Ryan Schneider, UVM head coach, will join you. We'll talk more with you at the end of the show and get you ready for Sports Saturday. As for what is coming up today, again, we're out at Goodwater Brewery. Come on out until 7. We're going to be joined in about 15 minutes by Matthew Ross, TSN 690 in Montreal. We're going to talk a little hockey because we've got the NHL trade deadline coming up on Monday. What moves do the Bruins need to make? How can they improve themselves? What exactly does the move of Frank Vatrano mean? Could the Canadiens start selling assets here? Could any of those assets go to the Bruins? We'll talk all about that at 6:20. We'll tell you who the Patriots and Giants should be looking towards at the NFL Combine, which kicks off next week. We'll do our daily spring training update in a couple of minutes. But first, the news that you see plastered all over the ESPN websites, CBS Sports, and pretty everywhere on social media is about what's going on in college basketball and the corruption around players and the corruption around programs. And let's just be clear on this. Today's news is not good, but today's news is not the news that brings down a top program. Today's news is not the news that brings down Coach K and Duke. It's not the news that brings down Jim Boeheim in Syracuse. It's not the news that brings down John Calipari in Kentucky. This news is bad for the sport. This news negatively affects amateurism. And if you haven't been paying attention to sports radio all day and you haven't watched TV, here's the long and short of what is going on. The FBI is investigating. We've known that for a while. But a major sports agent, a major NBA agent, basically has given loans and has given meals and benefits, impermissible benefits, to top basketball players and their families. Dennis Smith of the Mavericks got a $75,000 loan. Other people have just gotten simply a lunch. But all of those things, whether it's $1 or $1 million, that's illegal under amateurism in the NCAA. So that is a big deal for those players. Now, those players that are already out of college, they can't be touched. Markelle Fultz of Washington, who's now, you know, with the Sixers, with the number one pick in the draft, he can't get in any trouble from the NCAA. Washington could get in trouble because, you know, he played for them and shady things happened, you know, with a player who was in their program. But so that's the long and short of it. But this news doesn't bring down those programs. This news doesn't bring down those players or bring down these coaches. The news that's going to come, the news that could come, that can do that, is when you start telling me that universities and coaches paid players and families and bribed them to come to the university. That's where it's doomsday for a major program. If you start hearing things like, and this is not out there, but if you heard that Coach K paid X player $10,000 to go to Duke, that's where Coach K gets undone. That's why what happened at Louisville is so terrible. Rick Pitino's staff organized these stripper parties to entice people, to show people a good time and entice people to come to Louisville. Bribing is a problem. Okay, when the coaching staff knows about it and sanctions it and endorses it and uses it as a recruiting tool, that is what brings down a major program. That's what brings down any program. If you tell me that shady agents got to Markelle Fultz, for example, this is just an example, we don't know this, but if you tell me that a shady agent got to a top prospect at 14 and said, hey, kid, here's $20,000. Remember me when you make it big. Sign with my agency when you make it big, and then you can pay me back. That is hard for a college to regulate. Yes, it affects amateurism, but I feel bad for a college that is in the middle of that situation and really, in theory, could not even know. You know, it reminds me of what we see with Cuban baseball players. And it's not, you know, with Cuban baseball players, we're literally talking life and death in some cases. So it's not, what's happening in college is not that extreme. But what do you get? You get runners basically in Cuba that will tell players, hey, I'll train you, I'll fund your training, I'll send you to wherever. And then when you sign your first contract, I'm going to get 50% of your first contract or 50% of your career earnings or 30% or whatever the number is. That's what that reminds me of, where these kids are gotten to so early, and some of these players that some of these prospects that grow up having nothing, $10,000, $20,000, a free dinner, whatever it is, a car, is literally like that. That's important to them. You're not thinking about what happens 5 years from now. If I come to you at 14 and offer you $10,000, okay, at 14, what I do at 14, I'm not thinking about how it affects me at 18 or 19. So I feel bad for coaching staffs and programs that aren't even privy sometimes, in some cases, to the world of the agent. What is a major deal is if you tell me that there's massive recruiting violations, if you tell me that the program is sanctioning parties where women are brought in to entice, you know, prospects and say, hey, look at the fun you can have at this school. These girls go here and these girls like you. That's a problem. If you tell me, hey, here's money under the table, come here. You know, hey, every month we'll give your family $5,000 if you sign here and play here. That's a major issue. Those are the things that can come out in this report, and those are the things that will crush you, will crush a major program like Louisville has been crushed. That is the news that you should be leery of. If you're a fan of a major program, that's the news you should be leery of. Today's news is bad. It is not the end-all, be-all. It is not the worst-case scenario. And oftentimes it affects players that aren't even on campus anymore. But what could be coming is much, much worse. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Aaron, cue the MLB on Fox music, our spring training update. Man, it feels good to say that. Opening day, less than 6 weeks away. The music is here. The Red Sox and Yankees played their first games today, and they played pretty well. But I want to focus on what happened yesterday, because what the Red Sox are doing to Blake Swihart, I know that's not a name that you have much invested in, but the Red Sox, and I like Alex Cora, what the Red Sox are doing to Blake Swihart just does not seem right. In fact, I know it doesn't seem right. Blake Swihart is a name you remember as a former top prospect. He came up as a catcher. The Red Sox tried to convert him to an outfielder. He got hurt. He's out of options. He's looking for a way to get on the field. So the team has told him, look, you're not going to catch. We're going to try to work you out at second base. Pedroia is hurt. We're going to try to work you out in the outfield. We, you know, even though they have J.D. Martinez, we could use a fourth, fifth outfielder, a guy who can do many things in the way that Brock Holt has done them over the years. So what did the Red Sox do? Yesterday, they played Northeastern University, and they played Blake Swihart multiple innings at catcher. You have told him, you have told us, that Blake Swihart is not going to catch on this team, that Sandy Leon is, that Christian Vasquez is. That's fine. You are taking this kid for a ride, this kid that has changed his position for you, this kid that is trying to get a shot in the big leagues that's consistent, and his best chance to get a shot is in that hybrid position where he can be a fourth, fifth outfielder, where he can be a backup infielder. You told him this will give you your best chance to make this team, and then yesterday you went out and played him a catcher. That isn't right. That isn't fair. And I hope as the spring, I hope that the reason why they did that is because they had a doubleheader yesterday. They played Northeastern and Boston College. I hope that it's because they just needed bodies to get back there and receive the game. But come on. You've told him we've got two catchers on this team. We've told him that he's going to play the infield or the outfield for us. And then the first game, the first opportunity, they went and played him at catcher. That is not right. Unless you really think that he has a viable option to be your emergency catcher, which he probably would be anyways without yesterday's game, or you think that if one of those starting catchers or one of the backup, you know, if Leon or Vasquez get hurt, that he is your best option and he's going to be the guy that you go to, then he shouldn't be playing there. You've told the kid his best opportunity to make the team is to be able to play second base at times with Pedroia hurt. We know Nunez is there, and now Marco Hernandez is out. Marco Hernandez is hurt now. He's out the entire spring. If his best chance to make the team is to be able to play second base and some outfield, give him all the reps there. Give him every rep there. And I generally don't spend that much time getting angry and getting worked up about a backup catcher, backup infielder, fifth outfielder type. But what I do get upset about is when an organization tells you one thing and then instantly does another. This isn't to me like they told him this, and then 5 months from now, they stick him back there for three innings. This is days after all off. This is the first day, the first spring training action. You're putting him in a position that you said he wasn't going to be in. And that's not right to do to a kid who's trying to do everything that you've told him to do. He's abandoned the catcher's gear. He's trying to forget about catcher. You've told him your best chance is in the infield and the outfield, and you went and put him at catcher. I really like Alex Cora. I think he's going to do wonders for the Red Sox. I think the team will be great, and whatever he does with Blake Swihart is going to have little to no impact on how this season plays out for Boston. It's not. But I don't like the way that they started off their first spring training game and treating Blake Swihart in that way. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Continuing on a spring training note, this doesn't matter much to Red Sox fan, but it matters to me as a baseball fan, and I'll spend 60 seconds on it. There's a pitcher, a prospect by the name of Brent Honeywell for the Tampa Bay Rays. He's one of the top prospects in baseball. If I'm not mistaken, he had not made his major league debut yet. Somebody can text in 802-655-6672 and correct me on that if he has. If he has, he hasn't been in the majors for long, but I believe that he was a guy looking to get his first crack at the majors. His first pitches yesterday of his first live batting practice session, he tore his UCL. He's going to go into the night for Tommy John surgery. And to hear him talk today was just crushing to me. To hear him talk, and this kid is going to miss out on his opportunity to make the big club. It would definitely be his first time making the team out of spring training. to be in that rotation. The Rays are in a lot of transition. He's supposed to be one of the guys that their fans are supposed to be excited for. To hear him talk, almost tear up at his locker today, about the pop that he felt in his elbow and his season being gone and possibly part of next season already being gone. And for those fans who have endured, you know, those fans that never go out to the ballpark, but those fans that do care about that team, those 9,000 that are diehards, that was the one of the two or three things that you were really, really supposed to be pumped about watching. I just feel bad for Tampa Bay fans, and I feel bad for Brent Honeywell as a whole. All right, we're live here at Goodwater Brewery. That was your spring training update at Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Hey, it's NHL trade deadline weekend. The trade deadline officially is Monday. The Bruins, they're closing in on the Lightning. The Maple Leafs are closing in on the Bruins. What's going on in the world of the NHL? And is Canada over the women's hockey gold medal game loss yet? Champlain Valley Game Night. We talked to Matthew Ross, TSN 690 in Montreal. We do it next right here.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I know a lot of you now with the NFL behind us and baseball not quite in front of us, a lot of you have been clamoring for more hockey talk. And we've listened and we've taken that into account, and we're going to run with it here. So every week now, every Friday, through the duration of the NHL season, we're going to talk with our buddy Matt Ross from TSN 690 in Montreal. You can also check him out at Dead Hit Sports. He's going to join us in one of three places every week: Champlain Valley Game Night, The Huddle, or on our website on 1013ESPN.com. So we start that this week, so let's go out to the phone lines. Matt Ross, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I appreciate you joining us, and I was going to ask you, is Canada recovered from the women's hockey gold medal defeat? But now I need to ask you, how are they handling the men got beat this morning by Germany?
Yeah, a tough loss. Yeah, they lost 4-3 in regulation. They were down 4-1 going into the third, scored a couple of goals, but couldn't pull it out, and I guess they'll play for a bronze medal now. Really, really crazy. Former Bruin, Marco Sturm, the coach of Germany.
I was going to ask you about the women's game. Did you stay up until 3 in the morning watching it? What was your reaction to what you saw?
I'm still recovering because I get up early every day, so I'm still trying to catch up on my sleep. But, yeah, that was white-knuckle entertainment, that's for sure. Wow, what a game. And the U.S. did deserve to win. They played a slightly better game than Canada, and a couple of great goals in the shootout. It's a little bit surprising. You know, Canada usually pulls these things out, especially with their captain, Marie-Philippe Poulin, who's regarded as the best offensive woman player in the world. And she scored in the game, but not in the third period or overtime. And the U.S. finally won one after 20 years. Good for the women's game to have that same level from at least two teams now.
You know, I want to ask you this. We spent a lot of time talking about this yesterday. I made nothing of it at the time. What's the reaction up north to Jocelyn Rock taking off the silver medal almost instantaneously?
You know, it's kind of split. You know, some folks who are more diplomatic say, well, that's not the traditions, and it's not in the spirit of the Olympics and sportsmanship and so forth. Then you have the other camp that says, yeah, we came there to win, and we didn't get what we wanted, and this isn't of use to us, so it good on her for showing competitive spirit. It doesn't bother me either way. I mean, I guess I would have preferred her keeping it on, but at the end of the day, who am I to dictate how she feels in that moment? And so, you know, if Canada was there for the gold medal and they couldn't pull it off, it was it's certainly disappointing, but again, the Americans did deserve to win that game.
Matthew, let's transition over to the NHL now, and trade deadline is coming up on Monday. We'll get to that in a second. But what kind of tipsy-turvy world am I living in where an expansion team has the best record in the league and the Rangers and Blackhawks are in last place?
It's nuts, isn't it? I mean, the job that George McPhee, the general manager, has done with Vegas is amazing. You guys remember him as the GM in Washington, and he got kind of the axe because they never got past the Penguins and got to the Stanley Cup final in the last few years. Well, guess what? It looks like nothing changed in Washington, and he wasn't the problem. And now he's working his magic in Vegas. And, you know, it's funny. They drafted James Neal, former Penguin and Predator, because they thought, ah, we'll flip him at the deadline. We'll be in last place. We're an expansion team. Now they got to figure out a way to sign this UFA and add to the team. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do at the deadline. We're seeing that the Rangers are getting rid of players. They sent Grabner to the Devils, which, by the way, the first ever trade between the Devils and the Rangers. Amazing.
Matthew Ross, TSN 690 in Montreal. Also read his work over at Deadhead Sports. He's here with us on Champlain Valley Game Night on this Friday. The Bruins traded Frank Vatrano yesterday, a guy we've gotten to know pretty well. Look, they get a third-round pick back. The way I read this was, it's not a huge loss losing Vatrano. It's just setting up a move that's going to come later this weekend, freeing up some salary space, et cetera. Did you read it that way?
Yeah, I did. I think it speaks to the depth of the Bruins. You know, someone like DeBrusk is probably past Vatrano on the depth chart. Riley Nash is playing well. They're Danton Heinen, I don't know if anybody expected them to get the production they got out of him, and it doesn't really matter what line he plays on. So they have a lot of really cool, really great young pieces. And I think you're right. I think they're going to add a winger. I don't know if they're going to have, you know, the wherewithal to go get a Rick Nash, who would be great on the third line and on the power play. But it does seem like the Bruins are going to go for it. I think their biggest rival, obviously, in the division, Tampa Bay, is going to go after a defenseman. I think, they've thrown out the name of Erik Karlsson. I don't know if that all-star is bound for Tampa, but certainly they're going to make a move. So I think it's certainly, something that the Bruins are going to do as well, probably more so on the offensive side.
You know, and Bruin fans have been excited about, they've heard rumors of Ryan McDonagh coming here, but when you look at the salary, the Bruins only have $550,000 left before trading Vatrano. So now they got a little bit more. I don't know how they can go and add a big name that people want.
They're going to have to get a contract picked up. There's no question about that. I don't know if it's moving out one of their existing veteran defensemen in order to fit in a Ryan McDonagh. But they could certainly use the experience on the back end. McDonagh's been to a Stanley Cup final. He's a very coachable guy, an American player. He would fit right in Boston, you know, going from New York to Boston, a couple of good hockey markets. So it's going to be interesting to see if they do go after him. Bruce Cassidy's got some interesting pieces there, and they're probably a year ahead of where they thought they would be at this point. But right now, based on where they are in the standings, how good they've been, they have to go for it. They have to pick up a couple of pieces because they could very well, win the Stanley Cup this year if things go right.
The name that has started because of the Olympics to generate interest in the New England market is Ryan Donato. He plays at Harvard University, but he was the only viable offensive option on Team USA when it came to the Olympics. What do you think he ultimately does? Is he a guy who you think plays out the college season and comes to the Bruins system after? Is he a guy who uses the Olympics to just come right to Boston's system now and try to be a factor, in this actual NHL season?
Okay, first of all, I think it's just cool to hear another Donato playing for the Bruins. Obviously, remember Ted Donato back in the day, but it's tough, right? I mean, you got a year to finish here, school year. Do you go back? Do you finish it off? Do you go through the system? It's really, really tough. I'm of the mindset that you never know when you're going to be injured, and athleticism is fleeting. So if you have the opportunity, go do it now. That's, you can always go back to school later. So that's my opinion. I don't know if he's going to be of the same mindset, but certainly, yeah, he was the star offensively for the Americans in that. The other interesting piece from the American team, and I know people kind of roll their eyes because he's kind of done, but Brian Gionta was the captain of that team. He actually is looking to grab onto a contender here down the stretch and go for another Stanley Cup. The former Devil, former Montreal Canadian and Sabre captain. So he's a guy, keep an eye on him, a contender. I don't know if it's the Bruins or someone else, but he might get picked up for, third line, penalty killing, leadership kind of role.
Matthew Ross, TSN 690 Montreal, also Dead Hit Sports with us here, Champlain Valley Game Night on this Friday. Look, you're up in Montreal. The Canadiens are really struggling. More bad news. Shea Weber is out for the season there. You mentioned Bruce Cassidy earlier in relations to the Bruins. Well, former Bruin coach Claude Julien is in Montreal. Is this... Can people say, look at how bad Julien is. We knew he was bad all along. Or is there way deeper problems than him in Montreal?
Yeah, I mean, that's silly. I mean, he's been to two Stanley Cup finals and won one of them. He's a great coach. He doesn't have the horses there. The GM's really bungled the situation here. They never replaced Andre Markov. They didn't fully replace Alex Radulov when they lost him. They have the worst collection of centers in the entire NHL. That's not an exaggeration. So there's a lot of holes in Montreal. And, you know, at this point, it's actually better not to play these guys, get a better or a worse record and try and get a top pick. Everyone wants the Swede defenseman, Rasmus. So you know, why not Rasmus for Rasmus? That's the hashtag I've been pushing out there, right? So it's tough. I mean, they did beat the Rangers last night, but it's certainly a lost season. The question in Montreal is, where will the captain, Max Pacioretty, be? He's got a year left on a very easy contract, I think about $4.5 million a year. He could get moved for some pieces. Hey, maybe even the Bruins. Who knows? You know, he's a 30-goal scoring winger. Maybe that's the answer for them. So I think those are the questions now in Montreal. Is not so much, you know, what's going to happen the rest of the year in the wins and losses, but more so on the, well, who are we going to lose? Whether it's Thomas Plekanec to the Penguins, that's a big rumor, or Pacioretty.
Matthew, we'll get you out of here on this. We started this conversation talking about some of the surprises in the standings. I just go back to that again. I mean, teams that when I'm flipping on the television last, you know, April and May, I'm watching and expecting to be good again this year. Ottawa in second to last place in their division. And Edmonton, yeah, with all these young players and McDavid in particular, I'm thinking, okay, this is the team out west that can continue to make a run. And they're doing nothing essentially this season. What exactly has happened to those Canadian teams?
Yeah, so we'll start with the Oilers. The Oilers got great goaltending from Cam Talbot this year. He's been terrible this year. That's number one. Number two, the defense just is not good. They had some injuries early on. The young guys never really progressed. They didn't get enough help on the back end. I think that's a big problem. You saw a bit of regression in terms of Draisaitl in his offensive game. And the other guy is Ryan Strome, the former Islander when they traded Eberle. Strome has done nothing there this year. I think he's still in the single digits for goals. So it's been a very, very tough year for the Oilers. For Ottawa, they were a goal away from going to the Stanley Cup final last year. And now it's, you know, completely fallen apart. They missed a couple of glue guys. Mark Messier was a big defenseman who played with Erik Karlsson. They lost him in the offseason. And I think that really, really hurt the room and also the defensive core. Craig Anderson and Mike Condon have been terrible in nets this year as well. And then when they went out and traded for Matt Duchene, he stunk it up for about 15 games before he finally got it going. So there's some, and Bobby Ryan never got on track. He's been injured a lot this year for Ottawa. So yeah, it's been a tough year for them, and you're going to see them at the trade deadline really making some moves. I think Derek Brassard looks like he could be going to either Pittsburgh or one of the other contenders in terms of you know, moving a piece out. He scored last night actually for Ottawa. So it's going to be interesting to see. They're going to be a big player come the trade deadline on Monday.
Matt, real quick, I got to get your thoughts on this because I was upset by it. I can only imagine how you feel. Vlad Guerrero's going in the Hall of Fame as an Angel, not an Expo. How mad are you?
You know what? I get it. If you're Vlad, you want to go in with a team that's going to shower you with, you know, appearances and fees and all kinds of fun things to do, or do you want to go with a team that doesn't exist anymore? He really should have gone in as an Expo, but at the same time, the Angels have, count this, zero Hall of Famers before Vladimir Guerrero. And who's their next Hall of Famer? Mike Trout in 10 years?
Yeah.
So he was the only guy that the Angels were ever going to get into the Hall. So, you know, I totally get it. It is a bit disappointing. I don't think I'll go to Cooperstown this year because, you know, I don't speak Spanish, so that speech would be kind of rough to listen to.
Matt Ross, TSN 690 in Montreal, also Dead Hit Sports. You can find his work. He's going to join us every Friday through the rest of the NHL season. Matt, we appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Matt Ross. And again, I'm excited to announce that Matt Ross is going to join us in some capacity every Friday through the rest of the NHL season. He's going to join us either in the huddle, Champlain Valley Game Night. We'll put it online. However we distribute it, Matt Ross is going to talk hockey with us every single Friday for the rest of the NHL season. Again, you asked, I heard. Now we are going to talk more and more hockey. We're able to do that as the schedule opens up. We're also going to have baseball. Pumped about just everything that is going on. Again, we are live here at Goodwater Brewery in Williston. We're on Marshall Ave, off North Brownell Street. Come on, hang out. This place is open till 8. It's dog friendly. There's a bunch of pooches in here right now, so come on and hang out with us, having a good time. Everybody is excited. Everybody is having their post-work beers for the day. Hoppy Side of Pale, Hop Collusion, Clearly Hazy. There's a bunch of different ones on tap, and I've sampled a bunch of them as well throughout the course of the last few months. So it's a really happening place, and we're happy to be here. Aaron, what's coming up tomorrow on Sports Saturday? Because you and Bernie taking the show, Jeff's skipping out for vacation. What is that all about?
Tomorrow we got Josh Carey, the broadcaster for Stony Brook, at 10:30. We got Ryan Schneider from UVM men's basketball, assistant coach, at 11. They'll both talk about the matchup tomorrow between Stony Brook and UVM. And then we got Derek Dunning, the sports information director for Norwich University, on at 11:40 to talk about the Norwich hockey team playoffs.
Yeah, so that's awesome. That'll be a great show tomorrow on Sports Saturday. Now, are you old enough to know who Harry Carey is, Aaron?
No, I thought Harry Carey was something you committed.
So Harry Carey is the grandfather of Josh Carey. And Josh Carey, as you said, is the broadcaster for Stony Brook. He was also the broadcaster of the Hudson Valley Renegades, the team that won the New York Penn League Championship. The Lake Monsters were in contention for it. And so he was the voice of the Renegades, also is the voice of Stony Brook. Well, his grandfather is Harry Carey, and Harry Carey is the longtime broadcaster. He was with the White Sox for a while, more famously with the Cubs. I mean, the Will Ferrell skit. Now, you know who Will Ferrell is, Aaron.
Well, of course.
Yeah, so Will Ferrell, one of his most famous impressions is Harry Carey. He goes, "Hi, everybody, Harry Carey here." And that's what, like, have you heard Will Ferrell do that at least?
No, I have not, but I'm looking it up as soon as we're done.
God, what are you, 19? Really?
Yeah, I am, actually.
Yeah, so you are. You need to go to YouTube, look up Harry Carey, Will Ferrell impression, and just watch him do it. And then go watch a real clip of Harry Carey, and go read up on Harry Carey's Wikipedia, because if you've got his grandson on, tomorrow needs to be a good interview, all right?
Oh, I'll probably have sound of Harry Carey coming into the interview.
That'll be good. Just don't do your impression of Harry Carey, because he's probably heard that a million times. That'll be my guess.
I'll try not to.
Hi, everybody. We're here with Josh Carey, Harry Carey's grandson. And welcome back to Sports Saturday. Jeff Paul's out. Aaron's filling in. I mean, that's my impression of Harry Carey. You know, I used to, when I lived in North Carolina, there was nothing. And if you want to comment on my Harry Carey impression, you can get in 802-655-6672. I don't know that I do a great impression of Harry Carey. I think I do a generally good impression of Will Ferrell doing an impression of Harry Carey. When I lived in North Carolina, I was there for 2.5 years, and there was no teams on the air except whichever teams were on nationally. So even though I was a diehard Mariners fan, for a year of those 3 years, I became a Braves fan when I was 10 years old or whatever, because the Braves were on TBS, and they were on all the time. A lot of people who were, I would say 25 and up, remember that Braves were on before all this, Root Sports and Fox Sports this and Fox Sports that and the YES Network. Before that, the Braves were on TBS and every game was on. So the Braves were on, but the Cubs were also on in North Carolina because the WGN station would extend out of North Carolina. So I spent ages 6 through 8 listening to Harry Carey and perfecting my Harry Carey impression. And I just remember the most obscure members of the mid to late 90s Chicago Cubs and how Harry Carey would say their names. And, Harry Carey had to have been 75, 80 years old at this time. And he'd be like, "Here's Sammy Sosa, followed by Brant Brown." And, no one's ever heard of Brant Brown. Or, "Here's Sean Dunston. Coming up next, Tyler Houston." And, again, no one's ever heard of Tyler Houston. But these are, the mid-90s Cubs that I remember. And, when Kerry Wood got his 20 strikeout game, it was against Houston in, 96. And Kerry Wood was a rookie, 20 strikeouts. I want to say it was in July or August. It was Kerry Wood with another K. So you're talking to broadcasting legacy tomorrow, Aaron.
I will make sure we do honor to his legacy.
Champlain Valley Game Night, we're live from the Goodwater Brewery. Come on, hang out. When we come back, the NFL Combine starts on Monday. What should the Giants and Patriots be looking for? What should they should be focusing on? That's next. CVGN right here, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment. We are live still at Goodwater Brewery. We're here until 7. The place is open till 8. Come on out. They've got 9 different beers, 4 of which you can take home in cans. There's a lot of beer flowing here. Everybody, come on out. Drink responsibly. Travel safe. They've got soft pretzels here to order as well. They've got, let's see now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 beers on tap, including the Not For The Faint Of Tart, which is a sour beer that Jess had when we were here last time. She loved it. So come on out. It has been a really great day. We've met a lot of great listeners. And that's one of the reasons why I love doing remotes, because we get a chance to interact with you guys in person. We've got a lot of good feedback, so we appreciate that. We get a couple of texts in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Jim in Essex wanted to know how Claude Julien keeps his job. We also get one from Harry in St. George, who says that he lived in North Carolina, also in Fort Bragg, and he wanted to know where I lived in North Carolina. The answer is Cary, right outside of Raleigh, so that's where I was able to get the Cubs and Braves games. The NFL Combine is coming up on Monday, and the Patriots should be looking at defensive back more than any other position. The Patriots have a lot of needs on defense, okay? We've examined that. They need to get a pass rush up front. They need to get more linebackers. David Harris retires today, and Dante Hightower is always a health risk. But DB is what they need more than anything, because right now football is an offensive league, and it is a pass-first league. Now, there are going to be some teams, I think, that do try to go back to kind of that run-first mentality, but by and large, this is a pass-driven league. And what do you need to stop the pass more than anything? You need talented defensive backs, and you need a lot of defensive backs. The Patriots are going to lose Malcolm Butler. I see no way in which Malcolm Butler wants to return to Foxborough. I see no, even if the Patriots wanted to give him the money, I don't see any way that Malcolm Butler wants to be back in Foxborough, because I just don't know that he can trust the Patriots and their handling of it moving forward. So, Johnson Batamosi is a free agent as well. You could lose him. So you just need to replenish that depth, and you might need to – I don't know that you need to take a DB in the first round, but you might need to take 2 or 3 DBs over the course of a draft. You might need to take 2 or 3 DBs or take 1 or 2 and sign an undrafted one at the end of the draft. So I need you to be – the Patriots need to be looking at DB more than anything, because what do we say about elite – what do elite defenses generally have in common? Well, they generally have a good pass rush, which the Patriots don't, and they generally have 2 shutdown corners. And those things are connected, okay? When you have defensive backs that you can trust to leave on an island on the outside, you can allow more free-roaming defensive linemen and more free-roaming linebackers and safeties to come and blitz. You can trust your DBs, and that gives you flexibility to do creative things with that scheme up front, with those linebackers, again, with those safeties. You think back to the 2013, 14, 15 Seahawks, what did you have? You had 2 elite defensive backs every year. You had Richard Sherman, and you had Brandon Browner. You had Richard Sherman, and then you had, well, Jeremy Lane, I would say, was never elite, but the Legion of Boom grew. You had Byron Maxwell. So you had really good defensive backs. Look at Jacksonville this year. Had an elite defense, you know, one of the top-ranked defenses in the NFL, number 1 against the pass. Well, you had A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey. The Patriots have what we think is 1 pretty good DB in Stephon Gilmore. They need somebody else to pair with him when Malcolm Butler leaves. And when he inevitably leaves, you're going to need to replace him, and then you're going to need to replace, you know, you're going to need to have depth in the slot, because where did the Patriots get crushed in the Super Bowl? It wasn't so much outside as it was in the slot, because they slid someone from the slot over to take Butler's place, and then the slot was left vacated and struggling. So you're going to need multiple defensive backs. The Patriots should be looking that way when the Combine rolls in on Monday. As for the Giants, and again, you can get in here at Champlain Valley Game Night, 802-655-6672. The Giants need to be looking at offensive line. This one, to me, is a lot more cut and dry. You know, in my mind, I think the Giants are going to spend most of the offseason looking at quarterback tape and talking to quarterbacks and interviewing quarterbacks, and they'll learn a lot about all the quarterbacks at their various pro days. They'll see them at the combine. But I think at the combine, they need to spend more time trying to identify offensive linemen, because this is a team that we know. We've talked about this too. Giants couldn't do anything last year. Whether you thought Eli Manning was bad or not, he was certainly not helped by his offensive line. The running game was terrible in large part due to the subpar play of the offensive line. So it's absolutely a need that this line gets better. And Dave Gettleman, he said it, oh, the hog mollies. This is what he wants to do. He's going to build this thing from the inside and out, the perimeter in. The Giants last year were built from the perimeter in. Odell Beckham Jr., Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, Brandon Marshall, Dwayne Harris. This team was pretty on the outside and awful up front. So up front it eroded, and then outside everyone was injured, and then nothing was good. Dave Gettleman's taking the reverse approach to this. He's going to build the interior and expand out. So if you're going to do that, you're going to need to identify some offensive linemen. Maybe you can make a move in free agency, and you don't have a ton of money, but maybe you can sign Josh Sitton, who's a multiple-time Pro Bowler just released by the Bears. Maybe you can get Andrew Norwell. Some people say he'll be the highest-paid guard in the history of football. I don't know that you can go that high. So, yeah, same as the Patriots with DB, is you're going to need to draft 2-3 offensive linemen and then maybe sign 2 or 3 more undrafted offensive linemen and give yourself a chance to get more competitive up front, because Dave Gettleman told us at his intro press conference with the New York Giants that big people help you win football games. Big game, big people help you be competitive. That is absolutely a necessity for the New York Giants as we move forward in 2018, and it should start at the NFL Combine, which starts on Monday. And I don't get too into the Combine. Like, I enjoy the Combine because I enjoy football. I enjoy reading how people did. I enjoy checking up on how people's interviews went and how, like last year we had the kid get thrown out of the Combine, for not proper behavior. I'm interested in those side stories, but I'm not going to sit and watch the Combine. Aaron, do you get massively into the Combine?
I really like watching the 40-yard dash, personally.
Yeah, the 40-yard... See, I like looking at the results. I'm not going to sit and watch the NFL Network. I don't care. I don't need to watch you bench press 225 pounds. Just tell me, did his strength impress you or not? And I'm more interested in if the guy looked weak. I just assume everybody that's coming out is strong relative to their position. If you're not strong, that's where I'm more interested in hearing the gossip about it. 40-yard dash, that matters to me at certain positions. It matters to me if it's a dual-threat quarterback. It matters to me at linebacker and defensive back and wide out, tight end to a degree, and running. I mean, I guess it matters in a lot of places. I don't care as much about the offensive linemen and their running of the 40. That doesn't entice me all that much. It's just the combine just kind of whets my appetite before the draft. I do love the draft. I'm a big draft guy. Aaron, what about you?
I really like the draft a lot. I almost always go somewhere and watch it at a restaurant. But really quick with the combine thing, I also am a sucker for those wide receiver drills. I can watch those forever. As a guy who like played the position, watching how good those guys are, love it.
Big Mike at McGillicuddy says, one name for those to know about the combine, Mike Mamula. Love the show. And Big Mike, I don't know who Mike Mamula is. Maybe your name's Mamula. So at one point was Big Mike, Mike Mamula, and in the combine? I don't know about that. Hey, it has been a great day. Again, 6:55 is rapidly approaching. That means it's time for me to get one of these great beers that are on tap here. Goodwater Brewery is the spot. Marshall Avenue in Williston is the location. If you missed us today, come on your own time. You won't regret it. If you came out today, we appreciate seeing you. Sports Saturday tomorrow, Aaron and Bernie, 10 to noon. Get you ready for the UVM game, which we'll have tomorrow night as well. And we'll see you back on Monday with the Huddle and Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN.